This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on April 12, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The Commission is back in session to consider Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-11, Free Speech. We have Mr. Benjamin Barr here joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And we have a presentation this morning by Mr. Nevan Stepanovic from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 1224 and 1224A respond to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of Free Speech. Free Speech plans to run 11 advertisements in various media, including radio, TV, the internet, and newspapers. It also plans to ask for donations from individuals to finance its activities. Free Speech asks three questions. First, will its ads expressly advocate the election or defeat of a clearly identified federal candidate? Second, will its proposed donation requests solicit contributions? And third, will Free Speech's proposed activities require it to register or report with the Commission as a political committee? There are two drafts before you. Agenda document number 1224 concludes that none of the ads would be express advocacy, none of the proposed donation requests would solicit contributions, and Free Speech's proposed activities would not require it to register and report as a political committee. Agenda document number 1224A concludes that 7 of the 11 proposed ads would expressly advocate the election or defeat of a clearly identified federal candidate. 2 of the proposed donation requests would be solicitations of contributions, and Free Speech's proposed activities would require it to register and report with the Commission as a political committee. The Commission received one comment on the advisory opinion request. I'll be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. McGinn.
I support draft A, which does not impose any reporting obligations, so anyone, I guess, who supports the other draft, the burden's on them to explain why this respondent comes within the act. But I'm happy to explain why I think that draft's incorrect, but I'm curious to hear the analysis as to why these folks have to report.
I am Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support draft B. It's a little confusing because draft B is actually in an agenda document that has an A at the end of it, but I assume Mr. Barr knows which one is which. In fact,
I'm up to the task.
He probably would have figured it out even without any numbers at all, which one I would support and which one my colleagues would support. I don't really think draft B requires any further explanation. I have to say I've never seen an advisory opinion that looked remotely like draft A. If I were you, Mr. Barr, I might be a little bit offended. They seem to think you need them to write your brief for you. They don't seem to think you can find the precedents out there.
What brief?
Sorry?
What brief?
What brief, yes. Yes. Well, I don't know what else to call the 53-page thing that landed on my desk last night, but I mean, I'm not really surprised to learn that my colleagues don't support any interpretation that would, under 100.22B. I was a little bit surprised that they're not even willing to apply 100.22A. The financial reform ad is talks about voting, says you shouldn't vote for someone, and yet it's somehow not express advocacy. There's a lot of tap dancing in there. There's a, you know, there's a suggestion that you can't look at. I don't actually understand this. because on one page, on I guess page 25, it says, although most know there's an election this November, the regulation does not permit looking to external context and events of the day when ascertaining the electoral portion. Actually, regulation says, when taken as a whole and with limited reference to external events such as the proximity to the election. But then two pages later, or three pages on 28, it says, well, there's going to be this expansive run in excess of 6 months, which supports the conclusion that the advertisement is not express advocacy, because here we are 6 months out from the election, and surely nobody would be talking about the election now. There's no discussion going on now about the election that's 6 months from now, except virtually every day I hear discussion of it. But okay, I don't really understand how the timing of it can be irrelevant and on one page and determinative 3 pages later. And indeed, if express advocacy couldn't exist 6 months out from the election, one would wonder at the meaning of our content standard in 109.21 that uses express advocacy and its functional equivalent as the sole content standards outside of the time windows closer to the election. But I don't actually think it's that hard to figure out when there's express advocacy and when there's an issue ad. I hear really compelling issue ads every day, ads that, you know, I'm fairly confident are being run with the goal of influencing voters, but I have to agree, there's nothing in there about the election. They talk about policy issues. They, as the Supreme Court noted in WRTL when describing content that would be consistent with that of a genuine issue ad, the ads focus on a legislative issue, take a position on the issue, exhort the public to adopt that position, and urge the public to contact public officials with respect to the matter. I hear good ones every day. And I don't think that it's that hard to write one if your goal is actually to write an ad, a persuasive ad, and not to set up a test case. I don't know whether I need to disclose this as an ex parte contact, but I better do it just in case. I actually used one of your ads as an example. I was teaching a class earlier this week, and they asked me what I do on a daily basis as a commissioner, and I said, well, you know, here's an example of the kind of decision that I'll have to make this week, and I read them the first ad, the one with the tagline, talk about ranching, and I got to tell you, everybody burst out laughing. So that's just, if that laughter was an ex parte, I want to fully disclose it. Not sure what the significance of the laughter is, but I just offer that to you in case you want to think about whether that's the most effective means of communicating your message. That's obviously entirely your choice. But I think Draft B explains its analysis of every ad. I'm comfortable with it. I'd be prepared to vote for it today. It's my understanding that there was some desire not to have a vote today. Is that right?
I think that's right.
Okay. Well,
may I reply to your comment, Madam Vice Chair?
I don't really have any questions for you.
Okay.
Commissioner McGann.
I thought that would be the time you'd say no further questions. No need for redirect, Your Honor. Couple thoughts on B, and let me take this at a little bit of a different angle. Let's assume B is correct as written. And let me emphasize, we're assuming this. That doesn't mean I think it's correct as written. It says several of the ads are express advocacy and thus expenditures, I assume. Two of the solicitations would constitute the funds received would constitute contributions, and then your client, which I understand is three individuals, would be a political committee. First question is the mechanics of what this all means. According to Draft B, $7,000 and change are independent expenditures, $7,166.66. Or IEs. Let's say you left here today and decided, okay, I give up, their independent expenditures, and you put those ads on the air. Question then is what reporting would you have to file? Would you have to file an IE report? Now, as I understand it, the Wyoming primary is Saturday, April 14th. So dissemination is within the 24-hour notice period because you're within 20 days of the election, more than 24 hours out of the election. And the amount of the issue is $1,000 or more, so you have to file a 24-hour report. But because it's a presidential primary, according to the form, you need to indicate which state the IE pertains to. To use the words of the instructions, election for which the disbursement was made. So certainly that's Wyoming, but what if you buy Cheyenne Television, right? Cheyenne, I looked this up, is in the DMA, Scotts Bluff County, Nebraska is in the DMA of Cheyenne. Nebraska also has its caucus on Saturday. So if you're trying to reach the eastern part of Wyoming, you're also out there in Nebraska. Maybe this is helping you realize what you may have to do if you have to file these reports. And it took some effort to figure this out. Even ascertaining whether or not this state caucus was actually an election was quite a bit of work. And I have really, unlike you, nothing else to do but worry about this kind of stuff because I'm a commissioner at the FEC, and it still took me a very long time to figure this out. If you want to try to get the western part of the state, maybe you buy Idaho City TV, which actually goes into Teton County, Wyoming. So if you go out and buy Idaho, now you're in that state, which guess what they have on Saturday? Their caucus. We think. The FEC chart says so, but the FEC chart that's publicly available on the website does not say the Nebraska caucus is an election. My research says it is. Now, the chart does have a disclaimer and says this is based on state-by-state law. So to know how to do the FEC report, you don't only look to FECA, you look to state law to figure out whether something's an election. But this is just disclosure, so they say. So how do you split this up? Do you show the full amount or just do you do it per state? There's really no guidance. The Western Reps AO sort of answers the question with respect to Facebook ads or internet ads, but that said essentially estimate, divide by the number. It was a sort of a workable solution that I'm not sure applies to TV, but the commission has never really said. In fact, if you look at the act only requires that you state the office sought for the candidate that you're talking about. Obviously, assuming President Obama is a candidate, even though he's not so referenced in these ads, we know he is, the office sought is president, not nominee of the state of Wyoming. But yet that's what you have to put on the report. So there's an issue with whether or not that's even within the reach of the act. Then you have Facebook ads, which draft B, at least one says is express advocacy under B. I'm not sure how you break that down because we have a situation where B has already been held to be unenforceable in the First Circuit in the Southern District of New York, not because of some constitutional issue, but because it's beyond the act. So you're going to run an ad. I assume a Facebook ad is going to be seen by people nationally. So we have a situation where in part of the country, it's not express advocacy. Another part of the country, I guess it is. Good luck. I'm not sure how that factors into how you're supposed to report this. Now, what if you wait until next week, which I guess is what we may do because we need more time. Then you're not going to need to file a 48-hour report because, well, you're not going to spend more than 10 grand. So there's two different reporting thresholds there. The timing issue is something I'd like to ask you about. And you haven't had a lot of time to review the drafts, but given the time, I mean, we've been here for a while, so maybe you've had a chance to peruse them. The question I have with draft B is when does free speech actually become a political committee? I read the draft as saying they're a political committee essentially now, as of the moment that you raise or spend more than $1,000, I guess, but it really seems to say you're already a political committee. Question is, what if you air the ethics TV ad first, which all agree, I think, is not express advocacy? So if you raise it today and assume the money that you receive is in response to one of the solicitations that all agree are not, or at least both drafts agree, are not contributions, right? So you haven't received contributions under, you haven't made expenditures under the Act. You're doing what I think everyone thinks is not an expenditure. It's at best an electioneering communication. But if you're a political committee now, you don't need to file the EC report. So you can't be a political committee yet. You agree? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's say next you run the gun control ad, which is $2,000, and let's say you spend that money now. You'd load up for whatever reason. Are you a political committee now under draft A or draft B? Sorry, draft B. You're now at 50-50, sort of. Two ads, but the cost is different. But you have the public statement of purpose that says you're not a political committee. But draft B says that once you cross the $1,000 amount, you are a political committee.
It says even more than that. The draft B analysis of solicitations moves beyond any regulable set of communications that's express advocacy and asks about issue advocacy that is campaign related and looks at the money there as part of the major purpose determination that can trigger the political committee status. I have no idea where that line is. My clients have no idea where that line is. They just like to speak.
The concern I have with draft B is I'm not sure when, even if it's correct, when do you really become a political committee under the Act? It seems to say you are because we know you are. And I really read it as essentially doing, although it says it's doing the expenditure and contribution analysis first, it really is doing major purpose first and then tagging on expenditures and contributions after the fact. The commission used to do that once upon a time, but then the commission said they're not going to do that anymore and made that decision public, which was the right thing to do, I think, because unless you go through the Act, you can't become a political committee. Major purpose just limits the reach of the Act. But I'm kind of curious to know does draft B change its answer if the spending comes in a different sort of order?
No, I mean, I think...
Well, I wasn't really... I was just throwing out... Yes. We're also deliberating while we ask you questions. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. Assume no one else does either. Okay.
What I was pointing to earlier is draft B's analysis of solicitation on page 24, you know, the conclusion that free speech has as its major purpose federal campaign activity is further supported by the fact that even its non-express advocacy will attack or oppose a clearly identified federal candidate.
By definition, that actually shows a major purpose of something other than nomination or election of a candidate. Right, unless you're presuming this sort of major purpose, know it when you see it, and then we sort of figure out where expenditures and contributions happen later.
Yes.
Right, I mean, if you believe what the Citizens United Court said, that PACs are separate entities and exist, I would think you'd have to exist before you speak. And what the commission has never done is really given any sort of guidance as to when that point occurs. It's always done after the fact on a case-by-case basis. Here it has a very practical concern. If you do something before you become, let's assume you're not a political committee, well, until you're a political committee, meaning it's, at some point you have to spend at least $1,000 on expenditures or receive at least $1,000 in contributions. If you do the EC before you become a political committee, does that electioneering communication then also show major purpose that you're a political committee, even though you made the EC before you actually became a PAC? I don't see how it can, but draft B seems to say that's exactly how it works. I don't get it. It seems to me to be circular. Now, on the other hand, if you do all your ECs first and then you do nothing but IEs, then you are starting to look more like a political committee, assuming that they're IEs. So I don't understand how this works timing-wise or how anyone could know this. And the even getting an AO doesn't answer the question because it still becomes fluid after-the-fact decision-making. And as a practical matter, if you're a political committee and you do an electioneering communication first, you don't have to file Form 9, electioneering communication reports. Those are only for non-political committees. So if you file Form 9, that means, well, I guess you're not a political committee, but then you are a political committee, so you didn't have to file that form. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, someone could say, well, that's cute. Not, it is cute, but these are the facts of the case, and this is a real case with three individuals who want to speak. I'm not raising big constitutional fancy stuff. I'm not doing any of that. I'm talking about what the act means and what we actually do with a real case. The analysis of gun control and educated voters vote on principle. The analysis makes it sound a lot like Hillary the movie. It's the same kind of language that the Supreme Court found to come within the appeal to vote test. I don't think it's nearly as strong as the movie. The movie was hours and hours of Hillary Clinton's bad. But it's the same kind of, it has the same kind of feel. I'm assuming that's why it comes within 100.22B. Since the FEC has said 100.22B is the same as the WRTL appeal to vote test. Recently, a district court agreed with that. Real Truth About Obama down in Virginia, the district judge said, yes, it's the same basic test. Here's the question I have for you, though. The Supreme Court treated Hillary the movie as a prohibited EC because it came within that test. Came within the appeal to vote test and thus was the functional equivalent, and the issue was whether or not they could prohibit that electioneering communication. If appeal to vote and 100.22B are the same thing, then the movie also comes within B. If it comes within B, then that makes it an expenditure. But the Act says it can't be both an expenditure and an electioneering communication. So, which reporting regime are you subject to? And assume for the sake of argument that the draft is correct, that both those ads come within the appeal to vote test as articulated by the U.S. Supreme Court and are the functional equivalent of express advocacy. Is it an EC per the Supreme Court or an IE per draft B?
We don't know where that line is, and also disturbing in draft B is the internal inconsistency. The Facebook version of the gun control ad, that's D on page 10, speaks to the character, qualifications, and fitness of Obama for office. But then we come to F on page 11, which also speaks to the character, qualifications, and fitness of Obama for office, and that is deemed express advocacy. I have no idea where the lines are. The hope of this advisory opinion request was to be able to obtain clear lines of demarcation so my clients don't go to jail and don't get fined for speaking.
Curious if anyone knows what given that the tests are now the same test, what's one to do when there's two different reporting regimes at issue? And the Act says it can't be both. Okay. No explanation for that one either. Final question on draft B, the first ad, environmental policy, which apparently was funny. B, to go through an analysis of B, you need to identify an electoral portion that's unmistakable, unambiguous, and suggestive of only one meeting. The draft B, to me, doesn't really identify what's the electoral portion. It says it contains one that expressly exhorts listeners to take action this November. So I guess that means this November is not the electoral portion. It's the action that you're urged to take this November that's the electoral portion. But then later it says the tagline, talk about ranching, which is sort of the action urged this November, does not negate the advertisements express electoral advocacy. But I thought talk about ranching was the express electoral advocacy per draft B. Then, in a interesting move, it claims it's an obvious non sequitur. Okay, that may be true, but I don't see how that makes it express advocacy. If anything, that makes it confusing and probably elicits laughter because it's so confusing and not an effective message because, well, it's not clear. But then it says no reasonable person can conclude that the advertisement actually encourages listeners to talk about ranching in November rather than advocating against President Obama, even though that's precisely what the ad says. So it says what it says, but it doesn't really mean what it says because no reasonable person would really think that's what it means because I guess we all know what you really mean. And then we use the predominantly criticizes a candidate's character qualifications and fitness for office test as opposed to the E and J language of B where criticism of character qualification fitness for office could be expressed advocacy. It has no other reasonable interpretation, right? There's no predominant test in the E and J. Talk about ranching could only be understood in the context of the election. So, but for the election, no one understands what your ad means. Thus, the advertisement's direction to call your neighbors to discuss President Obama's ranching policies this November encourages actions to defeat President Obama, but it never says what those actions are that are somehow encouraged. So I'm trying to find the electoral portion, which I think is really the first step in an analysis of B. I'm just looking at the reg. I'm not talking where the constitutional endpoint is or any of that, or whether B is within or not within the act. I'm having trouble putting it in the framework of B, so I at least know what my next question would be. So can anyone explain to me what in the ad is the electoral portion?
May I supplement this, Commissioner McGann?
Well, maybe you can identify the electoral portion.
I'd like to know where the electoral portion. It seems to me like the Yeti. It's often cited but never quite seen. The Wyoming is home to $943 million in agricultural economy in a year. 11,000 farms, averaging on average 2,700 acres. Talk about ranching. Absolutely. That is the predominant agricultural ranching state. It is a message of dire importance for the clients to be able to get out and talk about that issue. It may seem silly to those living in the Beltway. May laugh out loud about it, but for people living in Wyoming who want to speak out, these are dramatically important issues. I went through and tried to figure out the internal inconsistencies on draft B, and I can't quite find the electoral port. That term is used in several of the ads and the analysis. I don't know. I think what it may be is saying the words this November or this fall. I think that sends you to jail, but not saying it doesn't send you to jail. I don't know. That's my theory.
It's not jail.
Clear, we're not talking about jail.
Well, unless you're a foreign national, then I think we are. Right.
Well, knowing in willful violation of the law.
The commission's never taken B off the books, and you're not a foreign national, but actually, if you're a foreign national that intentionally runs an independent expenditure, I think that's still banned, right? And I think the commission's never said B does not apply in that context. At least the commission has never said that.
In my understanding, the failure to report is a political
jail's
committee.
Jail's kind of an overstatement for the purposes of the facts of this AO.
Yeah, that's fine.
You call it FEC jail, maybe that'll get laughter. But it's
civil penalties.
Right.
And the like. We'd like to avoid. We don't know what the electoral portion is.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I certainly don't suggest that ranching is an important part of our entire country and certainly Wyoming. I think I assume the point is that people in Wyoming and those who are concerned about ranching, and I know some folks in my home state of Minnesota who maybe wouldn't have, we call them farms, it depends on how big it is and what your predominant part of your farm is, whether it's bovine or others, but people talk about it all year long. And so the electoral portion here, I think this is where the line is, and I recognize that your preference for where the line might be might lead you to conclude that these are internal inconsistencies in the draft, but I disagree. The line is when you tell people that Obama cannot be counted on to represent Wyoming values, and this November you should call your neighbors and talk about ranching. I assume you talk to your neighbors about ranching, about the price of feed, about the price of cattle all the time. But when you're calling them in November to talk about how Obama cannot be counted on to represent these Wyoming values that are fundamental to ranching, that, to me, is the electoral portion. And I don't think that it would be so particularly difficult. At the outset, I should state I support Draft B. I would be prepared to vote on it today if others are ready to support drafts. You did present us with, obviously, some very detailed ads, and we've gone through each of them and, I think, applied the regulations as, in my view, they need to be applied. You had mentioned two other a set of advertisements, both entitled Gun Control. One is a Facebook advertisement, one is a television advertisement. Of course, the scripts, the text is different from those, and so we have to apply the test to each of them separately, even though they have the same title. The Facebook advertisement is, I suppose, by necessity, much shorter. It simply states that Obama supports gun control, don't trust him, support Wyoming state candidates who will protect your rights. That one, Draft B concludes, is not express advocacy. The call to action is about state candidates. It does mention Obama, and so maybe we'd be in an EC world, depending on what timing we might be in, but for purposes of express advocacy, that one is outside of that line. The other one, although has the same title, explicitly says that people should seriously doubt the qualifications of Obama because he's an ardent supporter of gun control, and that this fall you should get enraged and get engaged and get educated. And that is an electoral nexus, an electoral portion that deals with a federal candidate. It also, I think, tells people to think about this when they're looking at state candidates as well, but that doesn't diminish the fact that it is connecting the qualifications of the president and what one is supposed to do in this fall. Because, of course, the only way one can affect their views on some of these issues is to go and vote on them. So there are a lot of issues about, you know, timing raised, but, of course, this isn't a fact pattern that we've come across in sort of a MER context. You've told us this is a set of activities that you would like to engage in. You've asked us for an opinion as to where they fall on the line and what is the result in terms of political committee status. So while I would agree that you're not a political committee at this very moment, but when this group of people does make $1,000 in expenditures or receive in contributions, given what you have told us about your planned activities and the set of your planned activities, you would become a political committee. We don't have to get into, because you have come to us and presented this set of information, and another group that might be out there that today spends $999 on one thing and another $100 on another thing, and when do they become a political committee? You've explained to us what your proposed spending is. This is your plan at this point in time. Obviously, there might be things that you do in the future, but based on this advisory opinion request you've presented to us, I think Draft B reaches the right conclusions. Thank you.
Mr. McGann?
I'm not sure I agree with some of that. Because I heard it to say that this really hasn't come up before in a MER, and how I heard that was that the issue of whether or not it's an EC or an IE hasn't come up. And if that's what I heard, I think it has. At Americans for Job Security, it came up, and footnote 13 of half the commission's statement of reasons makes clear that they thought a certain ad was 100.22B and came within the WRTL test. And if it was within the election and communication statute, it would be within the test. So this has come up, and a number of commissioners have said that essentially it's both, which raises the practical question I raise, is which report do you file? Form 9, Form 5. They're two different reports, two different schedules, two different thresholds. They couldn't be more different. I think something that gets lost when people talk about it is they assume it's just kind of one report and it's the same report. It's not the same report. It's two completely different schedules. I do need some help on the financial reform ad, because to me that's a very close call, because I'm concerned that that can be read. And again, I'm not looking at external thing, because under 100.22A, you don't look for the external sorts of conduct. That's B. So of course, the analysis has references to that in the second part of the analysis in draft A, because, well, that's what the reg calls for. But under A, I look at this and I'm seeing something that looks a lot like MCFL. I think it's a step beyond MCFL, but I'm not sure that makes it beyond the act. I'd like to get your take on the financial reform ad as to why that's not MCFL, since it identifies a candidate, it identifies him as supporting the financial, to read it sort of paraphrase, it identifies Obama, it supports financial bailouts, then it says what kind of person supports bailouts. Now, draft A sort of, you know, says, well, it says at the expense of the average Americans. It never says Obama says that. Maybe that's the riddle, and I've uncovered the riddle. But then it says not any kind we would vote for, and neither should you. So it certainly has a electoral, I think that says, don't vote for someone who supports bailouts at the expense of average Americans. Then it has this call to action. It's not like the MCFL. You know, this is not an endorsement of a candidate thing, but I think it's distinguishable from MCFL, but I could see someone saying, well, it's still kind of the same idea. So could you help me either say distinguish this from MCFL?
I think it is a very close call, and it is remarkably similar to MCFL. I think what's important here is it's a commentary, and so the explicit call to action is the last line. Call President Obama and put his antics to an end. That's what free speech wants individuals to do. The remainder is commentary and public discussion. And so we know after MCFL, in the wake of Wisconsin Rights Alive, in the wake of Citizens United and other constitutional developments, that any type of close call should be turned to the speaker, should be turned in presumption of individuals being able to speak.
I've heard some suggest at one point that those limiting rules articulated by the controlling opinion in WRTL only applied to banning corporate speech within 30 days and 60 days of a federal election. I've also heard since then, well, we're not entirely sure, does that apply to disclosure? That maybe for bans, but it's just disclosure. Can you explain why
the Supreme Court's long line of jurisprudence in vagueness and overbreath, both in the areas of defamation, obscenity, and campaign finance law, are not to be viewed, you know, in the particular minutia of those facts. A vague law, an overbroad law, infringes all sorts of activities. So while it's true at issue in Citizens United and Wisconsin Right to Life was the electioneering communications ban of the BCRA, the same constitutional principles apply to regulations that apply here. You know, the Supreme Court referred to the electioneering communications system as a two-prong, 11-factor speech balancing test. And if you examine 100.22B on its face, and in application and the inconsistencies through this commission, through enforcement procedures and advisory opinions, you're not looking much better than a two-prong 11-factor test. And I don't see how you escape.
Well, actually, at least the 114.15 wrote down all the factors.
True. Right.
B doesn't define...
No, we don't. We have electoral nexus standard. We have positive light standard. We have, all these shifting standards. There's no clear line, and so this matter is fairly simple. It's three gentlemen from Wyoming. They want to be able to speak. They don't think the federal government has a rightful place to intervene and require it to register and report with the government to criticize those in power. And I think articulating from what we've learned in Wisconsin Right to Life and Citizens United, that 100.22b has no further constitutional validity. That's here. So I was, when I received the drafts, I was excited when I got the first one because I thought, wow, we're ready to rock and roll, and the commission has adopted the wisdom of CU and Wisconsin Right to Life. But then an hour later, I got a sour taste, and I got draft B.
And it's bad news for you, I guess.
It's unfortunate.
Could we go back to the Financial Reform Act?
Of course we can.
I'm not cutting you off if you want to sort of make your case. In your own words, I'll give you an opportunity to do that in a second. But are we saying that you've actually unearthed a tie, so tie goes to the speaker?
I think it does present a very close call. And yes, I do think that the operative rule from CU and carrying forward into 100.22b is to presume that there's more than one way to interpret this, and that where there's ambiguity and where there's uncertainty, that regulatory agencies shouldn't decide the meaning or the intent of a speaker, but to allow them to speak freely.
But I'm not looking at intent. I'm looking at the language of the ad.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly says call President Obama and put his annex to an end. But it also says not any kind we would vote for, and neither should you. That's also a direction to the viewer. I'm not looking at intent or effect. That's what it says. And are you saying that that's murky?
Well, you've got two. You've got
to who we vote against.
You've got two statements. One statement says not any kind we would vote for, and neither should you. And we have another statement, call President Obama, put his antics to an end. What is the true meaning of the ad? Do you presume to have to know?
True meaning, that looks at, that sounds like reasonable person. That sounds like effect, right? Not to sort of turn it back on you, but...
No, my point is you have two contradictory statements.
Well, they're not contrary. They just make two different points.
Right.
Right.
And which one captures the overall meaning of the ad?
Or which one makes it an independent expenditure?
Yeah, I don't know.
Right. Right. I mean, this is not the hypothetical from CU posited by the Chief Justice with a 500-page book and then one line at the end, and therefore the book, it says vote for the...
Right.
And therefore you can ban the book. Because we're not banning this ad anymore. We prepared the draft saying it wasn't express advocacy because I think it's important to put things out there and let it be discussed and deliberated in public because that's really the only way you know. The analysis in draft A, I think, works, sort of. But I could see another analysis of this ad that is equally compelling to say it's an MCFL express advocacy, and I don't think that's necessarily... coin flip or reasonable person or it's a question of law. And at some point, MCFL type express advocacy is still express advocacy.
No, absolutely. If the commission finds that this is MCFL express advocacy, that's within its determination. This is two sets of ads. I don't think the spending on that would be enough to trigger the political committee registration requirements.
Okay. Thank
you. Fairly de minimis in comparison to the rest of its activity.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Any other questions? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of points. One is I was struck when I was reading through the 53 pages that you guys wrote, 53 pages, and never said tie goes to the speaker. So thank you for not disappointing me. I just couldn't imagine you going through this analysis without saying that at
could
least
I,
once.
Could I actually explain why?
I don't actually care.
No, you wouldn't, but others may. Because the commission has never adopted those limiting principles as a part of B. B does not, on its face, or an E and J, have any of that language. That is a limitation on the appeal to vote test in the Supreme Court, but the commission has never said those principles apply to B. In fact, I think they've been honored more in the breach. It seems to me tie goes to, as someone once said, the friendly regulator, not the speaker. Looking at context, minimal, if any, discovery, inquiry, that sort of thing. Political committee members usually, in the past certainly, have had massive amounts of discovery. So it's not included because I see B, I don't see that in B. Now, maybe as a constitutional matter, that gets put in there, but the goal of draft A wasn't to talk about those terms. It was to talk in terms of the act and the reg, which is what we do here in AOs. So that's why they're not there. If you want to put them in, I'm more than willing to vote and amend B. We can put B out for comment and add them. More than happy to make that a limiting principle on what's an expenditure.
I'm sorry, are you offering to amend my draft now?
No, not B, 100.22B.
Oh, 100.22B.
Yes, 100.22 generally.
You actually want to amend 100.22B as opposed to repeal 100.22B?
Sure.
I'm trying to get my mind around that. I just wanted to say a couple of things about the question and the answer, because I'm a little concerned that things are going to be taken out of context. Mr. Barr has come in with a specific set of questions. We've taken you at your word that these are your intent to do these things, and that was what we based our analysis on, and we have answered every question that you've asked. There's no obligation, actually, that as I sit at this table, I have to answer every question that my colleague asks. So, I don't want people to say, oh, they couldn't answer the question. No, I just sometimes get tired of it. We've answered the question that was posed to us by the person who's entitled to ask the question. In the course of answering that question, we have described certain facts. We've described the ads that were put in front of us. That doesn't mean that every description of the ad, it's predominantly about this. Becomes a new test, a new factor. It's just a description. We have to describe what we're talking about. And I also wanted to note that draft A suggests that we would be subjecting the political committee to contribution limits, and there's certainly no suggestion of that in draft B. You've said that you're only going to be doing independent spending, and we assume that to be true, and therefore you wouldn't be governed by any. We didn't feel the need to say this specifically, but I don't want this to be misconstrued in any way, that I think we're just talking about political committee status and disclosure. We're not talking about contribution limits, because that's not an issue here at all. So in case there was any confusion about that, I wanted to put that to rest.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much for coming in, Mr. Barr. We will likely have another draft that will make blue in the near future, and we appreciate your coming in. Have a safe flight.
Thank you.
Mr. Palmer, are there any management administrative matters to discuss?
Madam Chair, there are none.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. And one last time, happy birthday to Mr. Dealey.
Thank you.